Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others.
And unless you know why they're in it, you will never be able to wake them up. Mm-hmm. Because the reason why you left is not the reason why they will leave. It could be, but mm-hmm. not necessarily. You got to first find out what are their values, what are their top values. And once you realize what are their top values, then and only then you can start working on waking them up. Otherwise, it won't work.
That's great. Which would lead me to the... So you said I stick to get my family out and for a few years and get my kids and other friends out. So why was it important for you to get people out?
Well, at the beginning, I felt like, well, if this is not the truth, and it's obviously false. And I realized not only that it's not an average religion, but it's a damaging religion in many cases. Although I don't feel like my life was damaged, but I could definitely see other people's life being damaged that could have been totally different. I'm glad that at least all my three sisters got married and they all have houses and they all have kids and they all have a normal life. Even the sister that my oldest sister, she ended up being in a university and she educated herself. She's very intelligent. She's very smart, got the skills. But then she wanted to serve Jehovah, so she went for pioneering, ended up in Bethel as a cleaner, right? So seeing her with her skills, with her abilities, being in Bethel cleaning toilets, I'm like, she was doing it for Jehovah, so I'm like, I'm happy for you if you're happy. But then I found out she's depressed, being in Bethel with, you know, they're supposed to be in a spiritual paradise, and she wasn't doing very well. So I was very happy that she actually got pregnant and left that environment, started her own family, and they're doing good. But I saw so many people who never got married, right? Because they had many opportunities outside the truth, outside the organization, but they always rejected that person because they're worldly, right? And maybe today they're regretting it. Many people who said, I never want to have kids, because, you know, the Armageddon is just around the corner. And, you know, decades later, they realize Armageddon didn't come. We have no money. We have no education. We have no skills. And we're getting old and there's nobody to take care of us. Tons of people like that, right? And I'm not even touching upon the families that got destroyed with shining policy, because we're going to be here for ages. Mm-hmm. But when I saw this, I'm like, you know what? We were told, right, to save people, go door to door, save them from Armageddon and tell them the truth. And so at the beginning, I think everybody felt like, this is my mission. I'm going to get everybody out. But I sat down and I made a list of all the people that I love and care about. And I thought about, you know, who am I going to get out? Who am I going to put the effort? Because I knew it's not going to be just one conversation. And I realized that the people who I truly care about is living my responsibilities, my wife and kids, right? And then even with my wife, I'm like, you know what? It's not my responsibility to get my wife out, but it's my responsibility to inform my wife where she is and what she does with it is up to her, right? So it's no longer this controlling of, you have to believe it, you have to, you know, listen to what I tell you. No, I realize, no, yeah, my responsibility is to inform her. Otherwise, if it was the other way around and and she left and she knew and she did all the research. And a decade later, I found out, I'd be mad at her, right? I'd be like, why didn't you tell me, right? Mm. Why wouldn't you tell me that we're in this religion that is, you know, it's got false doctrines? So I felt this obligation, obviously, towards children. Children is very small. And at the beginning, my wife is like, no, you can't tell kids. You're going to mess them up. You know, all those years you've been teaching them from my book of Bible stories and all the other toys that you've been teaching about how to be a witness. And now you're going to tell them it's all wrong. What are they going to think of you? What are they going to think of us? And blah, blah, blah. You can't tell them. You can't tell the kids, especially because I still want to be a Jehovah's Witness. I married a Jehovah's Witness. I want our kids to be Jehovah's Witnesses. That's how it's going to stay. So I'm like, but I'm like, no, I can't. They're my kids. They need to know, right? So with kids, it was very easy because they were small. But my wife put up quite a bit of fight, right? It's called the backfire effect. She's like, you know, I'm not following you no matter what. If you decide to go that path, you're going to be alone. And the moment the kids grow up and leave the house, you'll never see them again. You'll never see the grandchildren again. You're going to be an outcast. If you want to be that way, fine, but you're on your own. Right? I want to see my kids. I want to see my grandkids. I want to have our family. I'm going to destroy this family because of, you know, some wrong teachings that Rutherford or Russell came up with. Right? So this is why I stayed a little bit, but I realized, no, I have to tell them the truth. So when I talked to Jehovah's Witnesses, I was looking for some role model. I was looking for somebody who woke up their spouse. I went to many JW meetups and talk to people online. I'm like, tell me, what did you do? And to be honest, I couldn't find one person who would say, you know what, you do this and this is the result. So I kept asking different questions, right? If you want to get a different answer, you got to ask a different question. I asked them, if you went back in time, what would you do different? And that was a really good question because almost every single one of them would say, I wouldn't push. I got all emotional and I started just spitting things out and they got all upset. And some people literally overnight lost their spouse. Their spouse packed everything in the house when they were at work and left.
Because they'll see as the devil trying to grab them. And exactly. Yeah, I totally feel that. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I realized, okay, I have to keep going. I have to keep going to the meetings. I got to keep going to service. I couldn't be an elder anymore, so I resigned from that. And I'll just, as we're preparing for Watchtower, as we're doing this, I'll point out some things that she could see herself. And literally, like one peanut here, one peanut here, one peanut here. And then at one point, what tipped it over the edge was the blood doctrine, because I was such a strong believer, I was giving talks about blood, like was helping people how to fill out the blood cards, right? So I was a very strong believer in that doctrine. And I told her, listen, we have kids. If something happens to our kids, we have to be on the same page. We have to sit down and discuss this, whether we want to give them blood fractions, whether we want to accept the blood, not accept the blood. Like, what do we do in case our child needs it? Not about you. You keep your belief and do whatever you want with your life. But when it comes to kids, it's both of us. And we got to make this decision. So I printed out a great chapter in Search of Christian Freedom from Raymond Franz that talks about life and blood. And I printed out just that chapter and said, you don't have to read the whole book, but please read this one chapter. Educate yourself. You don't have to believe a word that is in it, but please read it. And then you will at least understand why I changed my mind about the doctrine. It still took her like 3 months to touch it, right? And I realized, oh, she's just too afraid to read it. So I said, okay, let's just read it together. So we read it together. And when she read it, she's like, wait a minute. This is not some angry apostate that it's against Jehovah. And so it was like written in such a loving and caring way. That she was blown away. And from that moment, she's like, oh, maybe I can read more. Maybe I can find out more. And she started doing more research. And then she discovered a whole bunch of other things that I didn't even know about. And then, you know, just a domino effect that causes, right? I found that with Jehovah's Witnesses, you just got to, instead of talking about many things a little mm-hmm. bit, you got to find one thing that you're good at, that you're very knowledgeable about, right? And hammer it until they realize it's wrong. right? And one thing is wrong, then it's like, okay, if they can be wrong on this, what else they can be wrong about? And from that moment on, it's easy.
But so how did your kids follow?
Well, kids were only like 6 and 8 years old. So
they had to, okay.
Yeah, they were relieved. They were at that age, you're very bored at the meeting.
They were relieved.
Yeah, because you know, at that age, you just go to the meeting, sitting there for 2 hours, right? And
you don't want them to sleep. You gotta be like, stand up, don't sleep. And
yeah, so they were relieved. They were not happy about losing their cousins. They were very close with their cousins, right? And we were going for sleepovers. We have a cottage, you know, we're always going to the cottage with them. And that part that they missed, but very quickly they found friends at school, neighborhood. We replaced it quite quickly. So there was never a moment for them that like, oh, we wish we could go to the Kingdom Hall.
Yeah. So when you were start questioning and you were just like mentally out, you completely don't believe anymore, you thought they were false, is that where your mindset was?
Yeah, the steps were this. First, I turned my life to Christ. Okay, so I studied the Bible inside out. I was reading chapter by chapter, some chapters several times from different translations, right, in different languages. I was like months and months of research. I talked to Bible scholars. I just immersed myself in the Bible. And my first conclusion was, the salvation is not the religion. The truth is not the religion. Jesus is the Christ. Jesus is the truth. That was my first step out of that, right? But then I'm like, I had this belief that in order to see the full picture, you got to have as many perspectives as you can. So I thought, well, who else came to the same conclusions and then later on realized that maybe the Bible is wrong? So then I started studying the history of the Bible, who actually wrote it, and you know, what's in it, you know, like looking at it more objectively, right? Basic things like the Gospels. I always believed Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John wrote the Gospels, and it turns out that not to be true. And for me, that was like, what? Like, everybody knows Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John wrote the Gospels. I'm like, no, nobody knows who wrote the Gospels. They're not signed. There's no names in the Gospels. And nobody actually knows. The names were assigned much, much later. So there's a lot of things you discover about the Bible. You're like, oh, hold on a second. Why is it that so easily I could say, oh, Muhammad believed and existed? Yes. I think it's undisputable that there was enough evidence to believe that Muhammad existed. But I don't believe he jumped on a horse and flew to the moon, right? It's a myth that was added to a real event. Mm. But, you know, you ask millions of Muslims, they believe it to be true. So I'm like, well, why is it that I believe that the man lived inside the fish? What evidence do I have for that, right? Is it possible that a guy named Jonah could actually live thousands of years ago, but the myth was added because they don't know how he survived when they tossed him over the boat, right? So then they added the myth of maybe a big fish came and swallowed him and then vomited him 3 days later, because obviously we threw him over the boat. Later on, he comes and talks to us. How did he survive? There's no other explanation. Then, you know, we got to come up with something. So then I realized how myths are created and realized, oh, you know what? The Bible is full of myths. There were some true events that we can prove historically that took place, but there is a whole bunch of stuff there that is simply made up as an explanation mm-hmm. of things people didn't understand back then. So, you know, that I think it's a process of being able to look at the good, bad, and ugly. If you're looking at Jehovah's Witnesses and you're looking at all the good things that they do, and you don't look at the bad and you don't look at the ugly side, you will always come to the conclusion that it is the true religion, because you're only looking at the good, right? The moment you look at the bad and ugly, then you realize, oh, they're just like any other religion.
Right.
Right?
More like hypocrites. At least Catholics, they know they just want to eat the bread on Sundays and do their sins again, and they're okay with that. At least the ones I've met.
Until you find out about the priests and nuns that are doing a whole bunch of shitty things.
Yeah.
At that level. Yeah. But it's the same things. Like if you start looking at the Bible and you're only looking at the good scriptures, right? Mm-hmm. Love your neighbor, forgive people not seven times but 77 times, right? If you're looking only at the good, you close your eyes to the bad, you close the eyes to the ugly. You know how God ordered people to be slaughtered for the minor things, right?
Yeah.
And all those things that were happening, that we read the Bible, you're like, what the hell?
Yeah. Right?
So if you look at the good, bad, and ugly, you're like, oh, this is just a book of myths and stories. Stories with some lessons. And somebody put it together, put a glue on it, and then you realize, oh, you know what? That's what it is. And people put it holy, and they put a fear. If you question it, will kill you, behead you, stone you to death, and so on and on. Then, of course, people until today will see it as sacred.
Right.
And then was the last piece was God. Like, do I look at the creation as a beautiful creation of God who is a loving father, right? Like, well, if you look at the butterflies and the rainbows and you only see the good in life, right? Then of course you're going to come to the conclusion that the creator of this universe is a loving father and caring person. But when you're looking at the reality of the entire environment is constantly trying to kill us, full of diseases, full of things that they're
depressed all day.
and it's constantly, you have to protect yourself, whether it's from diseases, whether it's from radiation, whether it's from a poisonous water or poisonous animals and so on and on. Then you realize, well, maybe we evolved, right? Maybe nobody actually created it. So when I studied the science, when I studied the evolution, and I'm like, that actually makes sense, right? So that's where I am right now. I don't believe the Bible is the inspired word of God. I don't see any evidence that God exists. I'm happy to entertain any of them. I'm happy to change my mind if I see evidence. But so far, I haven't seen any. So somebody wants to challenge me, I'd be more than happy to talk to them. But that's where I am today.
Did you ever feel guilty for... Okay, you know, they taught us if any... Just like the Bible stories where the bad company will come in and be Satan will talk in their head and try to talk in your head and you got to run away and shut the door and run away fast because of that teaching. And then you got the things that you research and you learn. Did you ever feel that if you tell people how you felt and what you found, you will be that Satan person? Because how do you know you're not actually Satan? How do you know what you're finding is not Satan's work and you're going to ruin their lives?
Yeah. I think most Jehovah's Witnesses have that. At the very beginning, I felt like, yeah, Satan is attacking me, right? Because he's the roaring lion looking at the sheep that it's leaving and I'm being curious. And I was literally told like a week before at the meeting that, you know, the curiosity will kill the cat and it's like cancer that spreads and, you know, all the metaphors that they're using. They're very powerful, those metaphors. Metaphors are extremely powerful on our minds. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, I thought that Satan is attacking me, but at the same time, I had to justify it somehow, right? So I thought, hey, I'm an elder and I already found out about one guy who read The Crisis of Conscience and he left. I don't know how to protect the congregation. I don't know how to protect the sheep from Satan's traps if I don't know where the traps are. I don't know what the arguments are of the apostates because I never heard them. So if I do the research, I'll find out what they're saying and I'll be able to prepare myself against them, right? So that's how I was able to justify it. Therefore, you know, I was able to overcome the fear and I say, I'll do my research and the truth will speak for itself. If we have the truth, then we have nothing to fear about, right? We'll destroy their lies. We'll destroy their evidence. No problem.
And then you found the truth.
and you're reading
that. Amazing.
Holy crap.
like the opposite of what you were looking for.
What happened? So... So when I was reading Crisis of Conscience, I didn't take it lightly. I wasn't just skimming through it. I'm like, okay, this guy is quoting a scripture. Let me see if he's not lying. Let me open the Bible and actually read the scripture. He's quoting here a watchtower. Well, let me find that watchtower and read whether he's not changing what the watchtower says. Let's see if he's not lying. And I'm like, he's not lying. I was told they're liars. And he's not lying. It's, everything is here. Like, holy shit. So if you allow people, if you get yourself to do the research, then it's easy to wake up. But absolutely, I was very afraid. And here's something interesting. When we were at the fire camp with my family, right? My wife was way too fearful to speak up. So she's sitting right next to me, and the entire time, zip, hours of conversation. Although she had her own doubts and she had her own thoughts, but she didn't want to get involved at all because she knew that the moment she speaks up, everybody will shun her, right? Hours of conversation back and forth between me and my family. And then at the end, she stands up, literally, and she says, "You guys are all wrong." Oh, including me. She says, "Nobody knows the mind of God. Neither you, you, or you, or you." Okay? Nobody knows what God is really thinking. Okay? We're only speculating here. There's no point of us debating here, you know, forever. And it's not what she said. And it was good that she said it because we actually stopped. And because the conversation wasn't, it's like a ping pong conversation. It doesn't go anywhere, right? So it stopped the conversation, interrupted the pattern. But the next day, my family sat down together and they discussed what took place. And they came to the conclusion that my wife has a demon.
What? Hold on. But she was defending Jehovah. I want to hear more.
That's about their mindset, right? That's the mindset that anybody that has a different viewpoint, it's Satan's tool, Satan's attack. And because my wife is very introverted, right? She would not speak in public, and she would not, she literally exploded, and they never saw her acting like this. So everybody concluded, oh yeah, demon possessed. Wow. And my sister's like, "I see it in your eyes. You have a demon eyes."
Oh my goodness. Good thing we're not in 1300, because you know I would have.
Absolutely. We would have been burned in the middle of town. For sure.
So I'm curious, since you are an elder, I've been hearing a lot of, when I was Jehovah's Witness, I didn't hear any of this stuff, but interviewing people about the molestation and how elders, they either, when they bring people into the room, they ask crazy questions that make people uncomfortable, and they would abuse people, like verbally, or how they treat them. And you're saying the elder groups were nice. Like, I guess you were lucked out. How did it feel being an elder?
Well, yeah. I can only speak from my own experience. I can't speak for other people's experience.
Yeah.
Remember that people who came out of the judicial committee and they expressed their feelings and thoughts, you only hear one side of the story. Mm-hmm. You were not there, and you never interviewed the actual elders who had the judicial committee, right? Then if you could actually have both sides of the story or a recording, then you could be more objective. But most of us, as extra of us witnesses, we only hear one side of the story,
right?
So we didn't have anybody in the congregation that was either molested or was molesting during the time when I was an elder, and there was no file in the cabinet from previous years. So I have no say. The only case that I heard of, and it was very unique, is from another congregation, somebody that I knew, who actually went and admitted that he molested children, right? And he admitted to the elders, and the elders sat down with him and said, "Well, we're giving you 1 week. You have to report yourself to the authorities. And if you don't, we will." It's very unusual. This is the first time and the only time when I hear about such actions, which led that person to report himself to the authorities, which was the right thing to do. And in my mind, it was the procedure that every elder would have done. Right? The moment you hear accusation, you go to the person and you say, "Well, go report yourself, or we will report you." Right? I thought it was the right thing to do. And I thought all the cases are being handled that way. Right? but the reason why that case was different is because, first of all, the person admitted what he has done. And second, the children were not Jehovah's Witnesses. So the case went public, and because of that, they only care about the image. So they wanted to make sure that we're not covering this up, that this person admit it, and this, the kids are not witnesses. People, it's public knowledge. We want to make sure this person is disfellowshipped and facing criminal charges or whatever, right? So in my mind, that's how all the cases were handled. Only when I saw Australian Royal Commission, then I realized, no, things are being handled totally different, right? Even as an elder, I never had even an interest in these kind of cases. I thought they're so rare that you was not on the radar whatsoever. So I don't have much of an experience in that matter.
What is your identity pertaining to your past being Jehovah's Witness? I'm asking that question because I've noticed people like you who are inspirational speakers, authors, who are helping others to know who they are and uplift themselves and do good in society. And there's the other groups I've noticed, there's probably other types, but the other groups were people who either just left or they left 20 years ago and they're still in that soot of like, oh my God, this happened, poor me, and I don't forgive and I can't get over that. And that's the identity. And you can tell what your identity is, but from what I see is you have a different identity. It's like you are uplifting and it's all positive, but you still have this past of Jehovah's Witness. And I'm asking that question because like me, not up until last year, because 2020 and you go online and talking to people and you learning more. And because it's part of my past, it's like I have an interest about it, but I have zero identity as of 20 years ago because I left and I don't care. What do you think? Do you ever thought about that?
Yeah, see, as Jehovah's Witnesses, we were given identity, right? And they're very strong about it because they know how powerful identity really is when it comes to making your decisions, right? So if you identify as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, right, then you will behave as such. Whether you're in school and they're playing a national anthem, you'll know that this is who you are, this is what you do, right? It's extremely powerful, right? But Jehovah's Witnesses only have one identity, being a Jehovah's Witness. And it's so powerful that it skews almost every decision they make. They make that the decision of who they're going to marry, what education they're going to have, what kind of job they're going to have, whether they're going to start their own business, whether they're going to have kids, what house, what car they will buy. It's all skewed from that, this is who I am, and how this car will reflect on my identity. Am I going to buy a sports car, two-door, convertible, or am I going to buy a four-door sedan, right? Like those decisions, they're weird for people who are not Jehovah's Witnesses. They're normal for Jehovah's Witnesses.
It's right? So funny. It's true, yeah.
You're making every single decision, right, on how this item that I purchase or whatever I do will reflect on me, of who I am, and how I will help Jehovah or the organization to spread the good news. The smallest things, right, your clothing, the way you speak, you will never say a swear word, right? Even if nobody out there is a Jehovah's Witness, you wouldn't say it because this is not who you are. And if somebody finds out later you're Jehovah's Witness, right, it will look bad on you or Jehovah and so on. So they have very strong identity. When you lose it, right, then you're like, I'm ready to die. Who I am? Who am I? Right? Like, just, I don't know which direction. I was very clear on the direction in life. I was very clear on my path. I knew who I was. I knew where I'm from. I know why I'm here. I know where I'm going. Every religion answers those three questions: where I'm from, why I'm here, and where I'm going, right? And Jehovah's Witnesses are very clear on the answers of all those three questions. But when you leave the religion, you're like, holy crap, where am I from, right? Maybe I wasn't made out of dirt, And maybe I wasn't made out of a rib. Maybe that's not a true story. Well, where am I going, right? Am I going to heaven? Am I going to hell? Am I going to paradise? Maybe those things are a myth, and then death is the end, right? Like, it's not as appealing to people to find out the truth, right? And if that's the case, then what am I doing here? Then it's pointless, right? That was literally driven into our mind because the religion, for some reason, was successful at telling people that if something is not internal, then it's not worth doing. I don't know if you can grasp this. Jehovah's Witnesses constantly are telling you, you can be curing cancer. It's a waste of time because you're helping people temporarily. We are trying to save people for eternity. Then it doesn't matter what you're doing. You could be the best person on the planet. And find a cure for COVID. Find a cure for anything. It's a waste of time. You would have been better off going with a magazine door to door.
Yeah.
Because that's eternal, right? While you're helping somebody temporarily. And they were able to convince people that their identity is connected to eternity. And everything else is a wasteland. And that messes people up. It completely messes up. The truth is the opposite. The exact opposite is the truth. First of all, we can't live forever. That's one. And what truly matters are the things that are not eternal. The things that we have plenty of, like we have water every single day, right? Clean, we can drink it. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm so happy I have water, right? It doesn't excite us. We take it for granted because it's there. But go to a country where there is not enough water. People cherish water. Every single drop of that water is cherished. People take care of it, right? Store it. And they love the fact that they have it because it's scarce. And the moment we realize that our life will end, the moment we realize our life is scarce, that it doesn't have the eternity on front of us, it becomes 100 times more valuable, 1 billion times more valuable. Because every moment counts.
So Jehovah's Witnesses don't feel like their lives is valuable then, because they're willing to die over blood or whatever.
That's right. Yeah. Why would you extend few years of your life in this system of things?
Yeah.
And you're going to lose your eternity. And there is nothing that you can tell a Jehovah's Witness that you found in this world that it's worth giving up eternity. Nothing. And this is where religion messed up people. Every single one of them. Not Jehovah's Witnesses alone. Because they told them, hey, if you do this and this and this and this, you'll have eternal life. If you do this and this and this, you can have eternal death or eternal torment. And it messes people up. But when we realize that our life is scarce, that it has an expiration date, instead of I'm ready to kill myself, you realize, holy crap, every moment counts.
Yes.
Every moment is precious. It will never return. It is the biggest gift that we have is life. And it cannot be wasted. And it's a great gift. You could be, you could have been born a snail or something, but you are a human being, the most intelligent in so far the universe as we know it, right? In the best planet out of trillions as we know it. And if you're living in a developed country, guess what? You are in the 1% of the most comfortable living that you can have in the history of humankind. Kings and pharaohs couldn't possibly dream of the lives that an average person who works a minimum wage can have today.
Yes. Oh, thank you for saying that. Thank you. I do gratitude every second. And other people actually, on Thursdays, I do volunteer at the shelter and I hang out there half of the day because I love being there for a long time. And I'm talking to people and they were just like, looking at me at awe, and I didn't understand that. I guess because Jehovah's Witness, like when I speak, I'm all like speech and whatever. And then they were asking more question. And they were kept asking questions about gratitude. They could not understand why I'm grateful. They're like, it's pandemic and this is happening. Like, you have two heads. What are you talking about? And to me, it was hard for me to, I do understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, I couldn't really explain in a sense where they could get me, because I come from a different place where I'm like, live for Jehovah and I'm grateful and this is happening. Okay, fine, Jehovah's will cure it. And if it doesn't, I'm living for the eternity. So it doesn't matter. So I'm living in that space, and I'm living in pandemic where I'm unemployed, but I still have if my rent is paid and I'm eating, now I go to the shelter now and I get food, I feel fine. And of course I want to strive more and I want to do more, but because of circumstances, I'm living by the day and I'm grateful for that day. So I do my best for that day. Or what's his name? Steve Frankel, that book, I forget the title, but where he was in a concentration camp, where he's saying that he found the beauty in the fish bowl, where he was like eating fish water for 3 days and he was grateful for it. And that gave him hope to keep living, et cetera. So I see things differently. This is why I'm so much about gratitude. And when you mentioned that about the water, and I'm like, yeah, when I drink my water, like, it's filtered and I'm like so grateful, I say thank you to it. And someone might be like, oh, that's weird, it's just an item. But to me, it's just like a different mindset.
Because we have it. I made a trip to India and I made a trip to Nepal. And when I saw what people need to do in order to get dirty water, not clean, a water that I wouldn't touch, a water that after filtering made me sick. Mm-hmm. And the amount of effort that they have to do to get it, I'm like, I came back and I'm like, I'll never complain about anything in my life again.
Right.
People live in the mountains, right? Like in the Himalayas, and the closest road is like 3 days walking. And if somebody in the family gets sick and you got to carry them, and I saw a man carrying his wife on his back, and I know there's 2 days he has to walk with her on his back to the closest place where he can take a bus to take her to the hospital. That's the reality for billions. But we're so comfortable in living in North America or developed countries, where we take for granted the things that we have, and we see online or we see in the TV somebody that has a better life than us, and we feel like a victim.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad I don't feel that way, because I'm like, I'm happy for them, and I actually don't care for a life of that anyway. So why is your work so important, and why you do it?
I think there's enough people who are ready to do the destroying part, where they expose the wrong doctrines, where they expose the wrong things with Jehovah's Witnesses. To be honest, I never had that desire. Very short, brief moment in my life when they're like, I got to tell people what's really going on. But I realized it's not who I am. It's not aligned with my values. I rather create a better path for people, right? So when they realize that the whole thing is wrong, they're lost. They don't know what path to take. They don't know, you know, which direction to go. They don't know how to find themselves because they never had their own identity. They didn't know which direction to take. So I go with them through that process of evaluating their values. Just like I told you, that for one person, let's say value is authenticity, and for the other person, the value is let's say connection, right? If the value of authenticity is first, right, then they will speak the truth, even if that means losing your friend. Mm-hmm. If somebody is more about community and more about connecting with people, and authenticity is second for them, then when it comes to speaking the truth, they will lie, they'll come up with a story, or they will just avoid the question altogether. because they don't want to lose their friend, because that's more important for them than being authentic. So by discovering which value goes first, which one is second for you, not for me, for you, right? And there's a specific process that I go through with people. They discover who they are. And then when they literally have it in front of them, they're like, holy crap, this is me. This is who I am. And when they realize that, they can also alter it. Right. So for me, I'll be honest, first was, you know, at the beginning, I'm like, oh, it's more important to be peaceful with the family. But then I'm like, my authenticity was like this, right? I'm like, no, I realized, no, authenticity is more important to me because I can never be among people that I have to pretend. If I have to pretend to keep friends, then the friends are not worth keeping.
Yeah, that's right? I don't have a lot.
That's how you develop beliefs, and the beliefs will determine your decisions. So I found out that process, right? How to do this. And then people literally change like this. They go from, it's a fresh breath of, I finally know who I am. I finally know I'm not attached to the beliefs that I developed. It's I'm in control of my life. I'm in control of my decisions. I'm in control of my beliefs. I'm in control of my values, and I'm in control of myself. And if at one point I realize I want to change because the order and sequence of my values is not serving me, then I can sit down, go through the process again, and now I'm changing because I know I reevaluate my values every year. I have them. It's like this process.
Oh, right? Wow.
And I write that there's toward values and there's away values, things that I stand for, things that I don't stand for. And I always tweak them every year. Right? It's like, how did this serve me? Maybe this year I'll switch it. Maybe this one would be more important for me right now. And as you grow older and as your life changes, you can tweak it. With Jehovah's Witnesses, there was only one identity. But as you realize, you have more than one identity. You have multiple identities. You are a different person to your spouse. You're different to your kids. You're different to your employer. You're different to your parents. You're different to your neighbor. You're a different person to different people. You're going to talk differently to your employer, and you're going to talk different to a police officer, right? Because there's more than one person inside of you. There's more, but the values are staying the same. Mm-hmm. And that's when you know your core, right? Once you know your core values, life magically happens because it's easy to make decisions now. Right? Instead of, I don't know if this is good, bad, because previously, if it was aligned with Jehovah's beliefs, it was good. If it was not aligned, it was bad. But now, how do I make a decision? How do I know what's good, what's bad? How do I know what's moral or what's not moral? People don't know. But once they discover their values, it's very easy for them to make a decision.
Nice.
Whether they're aligned with it or not.
Great insight. Oh, that's wonderful. So tell us where to find your book and where to find you so someone can work with you or get your...
It's very easy. You see the book feartofreedom.ca, because I'm Canadian. feartofreedom.ca is where you can find the book. You can find me. You can click over there and you can connect with me. I also help manage Empowered Ex-Jehovah's Witnesses Facebook group. I'm one of the admins. I didn't start it. Rodney Allgood started it. I just help him to manage it. And it's a great Facebook, because in that Facebook, we don't criticize Jehovah's Witnesses. We have no interest of destroying their doctrines. All what we do is focusing how to move forward, how to rebuild your life after, right?
I love that. I had people who reached out when I post the post, like asking for people, and people think, and I don't tell them not, I tend to let people believe what they want to believe about me because it's their perception. So they think they're like, oh, I watch your stuff. And because they watch other Jehovah's Witnesses talking about their lives. So they're thinking I'm out there to destroy whatever. But I tend to just interview people and talk about my experience. But I rarely to never say my opinion like, oh, let's destroy, blah, 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 let's get them. Because that's not my thing either. Because coming from theirs, coming from victimhood for me personally, I would think, come from victimhood and a lack, and I still have some trauma that I need to fix, and I can just leave Jehovah's Witnesses alone, kind of a thing. And I don't have any of that baggage. So therefore, that's not my fight.
Right. That's exactly right. The Jehovah's Witnesses completely don't care about what decisions you're making and what you're doing with your life. They have zero interest in your life at this point. Yeah. And I realize if people have no interest in my life, why would I have interest in their life?
Right. Best to move on, definitely. Thank you. This interview and this chat was wonderful. I love it. I'm so grateful that you give us all this insight. I'm so grateful for your time and talking to me, telling me about you and how you feel and what you believe and the work that you also do, because I'm part of the group. And actually, that's the best group that I like, because the other groups, I just mute them, actually. And this one, I put, I think it's called like start or first notification, because I'm all about decision making or fixing things instead of like complaining and rainy days. That's not me. So thank you for your work and doing that. I appreciate you.
Negativity will always win the sprint. If you're running, the negativity will always catch people's attention very quickly. But positivity will always win the marathon. Okay, so that's what we focus on.
All right, Jack. Thank you. Anything else you want to say that I didn't ask before we go?
I think that's it. Thank you very much for having me. It was a real privilege that I was able to share my story and what we do. Thank you for what you do, because I know that people are looking forward towards in finding insights, and they're lost every single day. There's a witness that leaves every single day. You know, there's somebody who looks for help. I had many phone calls where people are calling from their closets, you know, because they're afraid of their spouse or parents listening. And then they're like, I just realized the whole thing is a scam. I don't know what to do, and help me. I know I'm going to be thrown out of the house. There is a lot of that happening, which is very sad.
You know, I was actually thinking that I don't have the money, but I'm thinking, because that's like a imagination that I have, that I want to create a space where, you know, when people come out of jail and then they go into the real life, they need a space to be so they can build their lives. I want to create something like that, because I'm grateful that I got on my own space, but I'm sure a lot of people probably become homeless and they have nowhere to go.
True. Unfortunately, we thought of it, to be honest. It's not an easy thing to do. And at the same time, he has a lot of challenges you probably don't know about. I help some homeless people get out, and I created space for them. I can say I'm very happy about that. It was it was not a pleasant experience. I'll leave it at that. But I think it's more important to help people mentally to build their own life than to enable them to rely on others. Right. Because they're coming through. We're not, it's different when there's a child, right? Obviously. But when it's an adult, right, they have to be able to stand on their feet mentally, emotionally, and physically and say, I have to take care of my life. It's more important to do this than to give people money, than to give people a shelter, unless it's something extreme, which we actually have a team of people that if we find extreme cases, we actually contribute money and we help that person. But that only happens if we know the person personally and we know they're at immediate need. And we've done it several times to a few people, right?
Nice. That's great. Thank you again for your work, and have a good one.
Okay. Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.